But here we are. So first, it is our beloved Starhawk's birthday tonight, and she has a virtual solstice ritual fundraiser on her birthday tonight. It will be at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, and you can find out by going to earthactivisttraining.org. There we go. So that's wonderful. And I will be brewing my own trickster training solstice event Monday, 6 p.m. West Coast time with fantastic Amakayla, who has sung the introduction to this show for 25 years, and we've kahooted many times. And so this will be an audio only. And then late breaking news, our guest of this hour will be joining us as well. I will be introducing him in brief moments, Sean Patrick O'Donohue. So it's all gliding into place. That's really great. So Reality Winner has been released partly. And I'm always, we rejoice. We want a full pardon, right, for her great leaking of important information for democracy. But I'm always following the animal stories, because when she was imprisoned horrifically, she left behind her beloved dog. And I'm going, where's the dog? What happened to the dog? Like Ulysses Argos. And I turned to Lauren Isley, one of our great ancestor poet scientists, you know, and said, he says, though men in the mass forget their origins of their need, they still bring wolfhounds into city apartments where dog and man both sit brooding in wistful discomfort. That's a good one. But what I was thinking of, her dog, may her dog be like Argos and have a longer life than Argos. Argos is Ulysses' dog. The magic that gleams an instant between Argos and Odysseus is both the recognition of diversity and the need for affection across the illusions of form. It is nature's cry to homeless, far-wandering, insatiable man. Do not forget your brethren, nor the green wood from which you sprang. To do so is to invite disaster. And just one more from Lauren Isley to weave our context for our splendid kahoot this hour. Lauren Isley says, we are rag dolls made out of many ages and skins, changelings who have slept in wood nests or hissed in the uncouth guise of waddling amphibians. We have played such roles for infinitely longer than we have been men. Our identity is a dream. We are process, not reality. For reality is an illusion of the light of our particular time. So here we are. Okay. So this is Bardic Radio Summer Solstice Sap Rising. We welcome perfectly Sean Patrick O'Donohue, poet, herbalist, author of the truly, I speak truthfully, splendid book, The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are. It will be published July 6, 2021. I woof woof. I give it five woofs. Speaks the, and also to the splendid team at Atlantic, North Atlantic Books, who say it speaks to the hunger people feel for connection with the natural world and offers a new way to connect with nature wherever they live. Sean's website is otherworldwell.com. Herbalist writer living in the mountains of Western Maine. And prior to becoming an herbalist, Sean was a political organizer in movements for peace, human rights, and global economic justice. Freelance journalist documenting human and ecological impacts of U.S. policies in Latin America. He grew up near Boston, a short distance from where his great-grandparents first landed when they arrived from Ireland. And since childhood, he has been an avid student of Irish history and folklore. He graduated from Dartmouth College in 1996 with a degree in English literature and creative writing. Right, we are both ancestor Massachusetts Irish heretic people. So welcome, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And so grateful to be collaborating with you and with all of life for this conversation. So.
Yeah, and I love from the foreword, it says Sean is an exemplar of a modern successor to the, you'll have to correct my pronunciation, the Droi of pre-Christian Ireland, weaving magic and science, poetry and physiology with plants and charms, and thus creating radical possibilities. It goes on to do many wonderful things, but I'll you know, so, and our welcoming chart, just a teensy bit, is, you know, the sun, as we approach the solstice, it is in late Gemini, Mercury's realm. Mercury is stationing. It really wants our attention. What are we to be messengers for? How do we enter into the conversation? It goes direct on the 22nd at 3 p.m. West Coast time after the solstice, which is Sunday night the 20th, as Jupiter stations to retrograde that morning, meaning, or guiding, our messenger self prepares to go forth as our storytelling self goes back into the realm of collective culture to seed human culture with manners of engagement, participatory animism, sane reverent common sense, and that all of our relations be ones of reciprocal blessing. Right. So that really runs through your book, right, Sean?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I was reflecting today on the fact that I was born on the 100th birthday of the great-grandfather who first landed in Lynn, Massachusetts from Killarney. And his name was Daniel O'Donohue, and he was the namesake of one of our venerated ancestors who was trying to learn how to shapeshift in order to become immortal when the concentration and connection and trust were broken and he disappeared beneath the water, but is said to always rise up from beneath those waters on the 1st of May to bless all who might see him. And so thinking about that lineage and about the one who dreams beneath the waters, our distant kin, Rod O'Donohue, who lived in London, wrote a book about some of the family mythos. And he spoke about the fact that the etymology of the name has two implications. Dun Hada, brown warrior, is the common etymology cited, but there's a second etymology which refers to the family's connection with Dun, the lord of the house of the dead, who was a drowned human who became a god in order to learn how to help others pass. And so I like to think about being on the living side of that portal and trying to awaken some of what been hidden and forgotten and passed down.
That's great. And one of the things that many of us dedicated listeners and Kahooters right now love is, you know, syncretism is a sacrament. We explore, you know, our own lineage, and then we those with which we have affinity that want to be reunited. So the Yoruba say the ancestors have sent us to complete their work, and we go, oh, okay, that's really good. And then we can dance around, but I did want to bring up, you know, part of our backstage communing, which is I was very saddened this morning to walk along the road and see a dead fox in the middle of the road, recently dead. And it's a fox I had greeted the night before, you know, when it was crossing road. And I go, you be very careful. Don't trust cars. And cars were driving over this beautiful body. I'm like, no. So I went back to lift it tenderly with a shovel and to place it tenderly by the side of the road, going, oh, humans, no. But you wrote me a resonant story. You said you were thinking about the poor fox whose body I tenderly tended. But I do want to go back because you know, I think, a bit more than I do. Do you want to say just what you did for the dead fox in Galway?
Yes. So 3 years ago this month, I was staying in a truly beautiful and powerful place, one of the last remnants of oak forest in Galway, with a group of people. We were all delving into stories of sovereignty. And on the last day we were to be on the land, the caretaker of the land brought us the body of a very young fox he had found in the road. And among the people I was with were people who are trained in and connected with traditions of sacred hunting, so they knew what to do to honor the body physically. And I stood at the edge of the forest and opened the way for the spirit's passage into the other world, which John Moriarty would remind us is part of the same great world as this world, never far away. And the following morning when we were leaving the land, the fox's kin, three young kids sitting on their haunches on the edge of the road, greeted us, but I felt like they were letting us know that we had honored the spirit of their young brother in a good way, and felt so grateful for that blessing.
Well, that's great. And do you have any suggestions? I mean, I did tenderly lift the fox's body, trailing some of its organs in the street to the side to a leafy bower, and as I put it down, it rolled over, so the back was there, and it was just beautiful. And I'm going, oh, so you know, the fury, turned into grief, right? Which is maybe underneath much fury going. And then, do you have any? I feel there might be more to be done. Is there any way I could go back to honor that fox's body tonight after our radio cahoot? What would you recommend doing?
I feel like just putting a simple food offering by the fox's mouth and just being there in the moment of tender presence for that spirit in their liminal space, that their liminal space at this very liminal time.
Excellent. I will go do those things. And we know, I know a number of people who also have always honored animals killed on the road, and amazing, interesting things have opened up in their lives in which that creature, we don't presume, had become an ally of a kind. We go, all right, okay. So you're guiding us this most splendid book, The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are. You know, and you say, you know, anxiety and fear and dread, and to make the world feel safer is important. We want to come back to Wilhelm Reich, and you live near where he lived, I think, too. But and you say even in a simple way, I mean, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, really. To walk in the woods is to heal our fear and anxiety and our heart conditions, right?
Yeah. And I found that, you know, one of the great insights of somatic psychology in recent decades has been that relational trauma can only be healed in relation. But I think that that's not only true of human relation. And so often when I've worked with people who've been deeply wounded in human connection, I found that helping the person to remember that one tree that always calls to them and weave that relationship in a careful and mutual way begins to create that opening to the readiness to reconnect more widely.
That's great. And we're all, you know, reminded. It's a reminding time. Our minds are sifting back, you know, through our own childhood and then into our ancestry for those particular. Yes, I had a very, very important tree, a huge blue spruce. It's still there. And it's like, ooh, you know, much there. And as you say in your book, and a friend of mine in Hawaii when I was, you know, returning from my underworld journey, we'll talk about the underworld as well, you know, and he said, light, motion, food, light, then movement and motion, and then it doesn't matter what you eat if you don't have light and motion, and then food. And you're very up on light and movement, right?
I am. After spending many years not comfortable with movement, really spending the first many decades of my life feeling alien to my body and alien to the world around me, the past decade of my life has been very much coming into the realm of the moving sensing body and being with the rhythms of light and darkness that the year and the month bring.
And right, I was riveted to your book, and again, I do want to repeat it, not as a shtick, but as I just really want people to check it out. Again, it's The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are, because right in the beginning paragraph, I think your introduction, you speak of autism as animism, and I go, ooh, this is a fun book already. Do you want to guide us? Just, it's a huge thing. We could do books and hours on this too. But you talk about neurological pathways and anyway. But I hand it back to you. Going, the relationship of what we humans call autism, right? But you know, and animism.
Yeah. So fascinating that from a neurochemical level, I sometimes refer to autism as endo-entheogenesis, because where the neurobiology points is toward our tending to have very high levels of the tryptamine serotonin, which once it exceeds certain levels in the brain will begin to behave more like other tryptamines like lysergic acid diethylamide or psilocybin, with a generally lower level of monoamine oxidase A that breaks it down. So in a sense, we are kind of brewing our own ayahuasca analog on a regular basis internally. Stephen Buhner points out that just as psilocybin encourages branching in the roots of the grasses that it grows synergistically with, which are the brain and the nervous system and the signaling system of the grass. In the same way, psilocybin and serotonin in our brains create branching nonlinear structures that tend to make us more likely to recognize nonlinear patterns in the world, a little bit less able to make sense of received hierarchies, especially if their logic doesn't add up, and also have more widely open sensory gating channels. And one of the results of this is, so there's this myth that autistic people lack empathy, because the research to test that has been primarily around cognitive empathy, which involves making the right guess from pictures of people's faces about what response they want someone else to have. Whereas there is a second form of empathy that's closer to its etymological root that I like to call somatic empathy. There are a number of different names for it, but which is the actually feeling the emotional and somatic presence of the other person. And also, because of our tendency to dissolve categories, we are more likely than the general population to view a tree or a fox or a stone or a sentient machine as a person, then because we can't quite internalize the cultural rules that we're not supposed to empathize with them. There's a wonderful video on YouTube about this called I Object by Ralph Sabourin, which is a study of narratives of autistic relationships with animals that helped me really understand this more deeply.
That's really great and wonderfully described, right? Because it is a confusing thing, but in our kind of astro mythological guiding context here right now, and for everybody really, There is what's called a mutable T-square. In a way, it might be part of, you know, what you're describing in a way that we can all, you know, tap into what you were just describing. It's a high frequency of noticing more per minute or per inch than usual. Like, I mean, is that part of your dynamic?
Yes, it is, absolutely.
And also what speaks to what you gave, what you were speaking to is, it's the moon in Virgo, and which is language craft, bardic craft, reporting in now to be able to speak deeply in a conversational manner. That's our assignment. We aspire to do that. And the other dance partner in that pattern is Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. It's like focus and, you know, focus, reverie. And Neptune represents everything of value that has been exiled by mainstream culture, everything of value that has been imprisoned, exiled, you know, dissed. But it's said to be where a culture's soul or its replenishing vision lives. So the radical part of Pisces Neptune for all of us now, you know, is, you know, oh, humans, don't be distracted by obvious celebrity hoo-ha. Look at what is of great value that's been undervalued. That's where the action is, right? And so that makes sense of, you know, all those who have been dissed, you know, are really have most to contribute in regard to blessing and guiding. And I think there's a cultural shift moving. We spoke about that just a little bit backstage when I said, you know, the pretty interesting Netflix series, Atypical, I view it as a kind of lineage of the culture embracing, you know, or honoring and welcoming the outcasts. There we go. You know, and because it is about the primary character who is a genius actor or no matter what, who plays the character Sam, but is diagnosed as autistic, and the show goes into that, Atypical. But it's part of our broad tolerance, and you just gave great voice to that, you know, and that kind of leads us into your first chapter, which is about the healing from the wounding. I'm a little bit allergic to the wounding metaphor, but you use it well, so let me hand it back to you.
Right, but I can understand an allergy to that metaphor, but I feel like in this instance, because it comes very close to the literal, to looking at the similarity between the way this particular medicine is showing up for physical lesions and for lesions of the soul. And because it's the language that the planet itself spoke, or rather the synergistic community itself spoke to me in, I should say, because it was the Usnia lichen, and lichens being a synergistic community of, or a synergistic pairing of a fungus and an algae. So this is the long, green, hair-like, beard-like, like an often called old man's beard. To me, it's always green man's beard because it's a medicine that appeared to me first when I was at a point of being completely broken open, which I had prayed for without realizing what I was praying for and had no idea where to go and what to do. And went walking down paths that had been familiar, praying to get lost, and soon I was indeed lost, and I was standing amidst a circle of spruces, and the Usnia lichen was lying on the ground, and I just closed my eyes, and I felt and saw the lichen beginning to reach into all the cracked places in my heart and begin to remake them. And it spoke to me about my war against my own power and how trying to subvert my own power was actually handing it to the very system that I didn't want it to be in the hands of. And it also revealed to me and brought to me the presence of the Green Man, of that wild, healthy, authentic masculine, to embrace and engage. And then about a year later, I was at another breaking point where I had moved back to the city, was working, trying to tell the stories of families who had experienced devastating loss during the war in Iraq, who wanted to tell those stories to a nation and a press that no longer wanted to hear them, and watching the ways in which having people repeat the stories of the worst times in their lives seemed in many cases to be really bringing more pain. But I've been called more and more by the plant, and was loving what I was experiencing with the plant transforming my own body and the plant coming forward as allies and others healing with me as the matchmaker. But I felt I was really struggling with the idea of walking away from the more conventional activism I was working with. And so I went to the Pema Jawakut Wilderness in the White Mountains, just the other side of the border, same mountain chain that I'm living in now, which actually then connects up with the Wicklow Mountains in Ireland and the mountains of Snowdonia in Wales, after dives under the ocean. And fasted and prayed for a few days, and then on the third day I saw the Usnia lichen at the edge of the my fifth spot, and it seemed to be glowing and it seemed to be speaking, and its message to me was the wound is where the healing comes, and that in order to really find the medicine that can transform the culture, where it's necessary to go to the places where the wound from the culture existed, where the traces of the violence of the culture were on people's hearts, and find the plants, connect them with the plants that would bring healing and wholeness and transformation. And that in doing that, even though it seemed to be working at an individual level, it was actually engaging in the deeper magical work that brings forward the medicine that can heal the larger cultural sickness.
Right, and suffusing your work and our kinship and that which resonates within many, many beings now, you know, literal and metaphoric, so interfused, and that's, again, part of the beautiful astrology guiding of now, which we don't even need to know. We go, right, and I know the pagan reframe is quite jolly, that scars in our body or where power comes into our life to be able to brew the medicine for others. And we go, all right, that's somewhat what you were speaking of. But I like also, you know, when you say that you consult with people and you offer many herbs, and there's much, much, much very specific knowledge in this book, The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are. That we will get to after our short soon break, you know. And it's also related. You know, I often say, will we find the thing that heals us before we kill it? Right, because that's right. It's neck and neck. But you also say, and we'll honor this on the other side of the break. But that, you know, eating a plant, good. Being near a plant physically, entering into the conversation. These are all, it's really partnering, right? I mean, the many ways in which you guide people to partner with the medicine. Is that right?
Absolutely. And just to speak very briefly to that question of the wounds and the cracks and what comes in, I think there's an important cautionary piece. I'm sort of hearing echoes of my teacher's teacher, Victor Anderson, saying that it depends what we invite in. And that those places can also become places that untoward things can move through. Right. And so, yeah.
No, I do want to come right back to that. We're going to have our very, very short Taj Mahal break music, and we will come right back to these many, many things. Our guest today is Sean Patrick O'Donoghue. The book is The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are. I'm Caroline Casey, Visionary Activist Show, and we will be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his torus cry.
Off get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our perfect, splendid guest today is Sean Patrick O'Donoghue. His book is The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are, full of rich, nutrient guiding. Yes, we're all gliding into place. And Sean Patrick O'Donoghue has agreed to join me and Amichaela Gaston on Monday night by audio virtual cahooting for our summer solstice presentation. That will be Monday night, June 21st at 6 p.m. West Coast time. And you can register at coyotenetworknews.com. And in keeping with Starhawk, whose birthday it is, and she's got a celebration night. You can find out about Earth Activist Training. But it's by donation, right? We have a suggested donation, but anything you want to pay, you're completely welcome. So there we have that. So yes, no, we right. So Sean Patrick O'Donoghue, yeah, you were just narrating, right, that we're all part of broken traditions in a sense, and we can sometimes in our early whippersnapper years presume that the tradition's not broken. What you had said about, you know, opening self up to things. Like, I went to the Asclepion, I'm like, free me from anything in the way of all, free me from toxic, anything in the way of me being a, you know, and immediately it's like, whoa, oh my goodness. It was highly purgative. I'm going, oh my, it's real. Whoa. Anyway, but you were, let me hand it back to you. You were saying important, you know, yes, to have protection and safety, to open and close doors. And if you want to speak to what we invite in, yeah.
Absolutely. And also to recognize that it's not just the doors we open intentionally. When we get broken open by life, that's a portal. And yeah. We can, if we call to that which sustains life and call to that which is holy and whole, it can move through that portal. But if we feed instead more vengeful, more vengeful places, or if we fixate on the wound as identity, that can become a space that things that don't necessarily have our best interests in mind and move through. My teacher, Victor Anderson, would say that in order for evil to exist, there has to be something missing or broken.
Right. And when someone, some being we love, dies, it's like the doors, it's very windy, it's like, you know, and we can slip through.
Right, absolutely.
So, right, these, yeah, it's so broken open, right, and we are, all, and then culturally we are all broken open, and let's, again, you can go anywhere you want here, but, and you speak over and over again, you know, literally and metaphorically, you know, what restores healthy flow. Here's the waters of life, right? And hot and spicy, or astringent and bitter, and, you know, color. And I hope we get to drop doses as well over there. So the boundaries, and you talk about, you know, Devil's Club and what is useful, and then I want to also honor your COVID adventure. So what is useful as a boundary, do you find?
I think what's most useful as a boundary is knowing who we are.
Uh-huh.
And knowing who and what we are connected to. Because I feel like when we are full of ourselves in a good way, full of ourselves in a true way, not in an egoic way, but when we're full of who we actually are, there's no room for something else to move us off course. And I feel like that's one of the key medicines of Devil's Club, is helping people to remember and stand fully in who they are. Listening earlier to a lecture from James Baldwin, and he said that dignity comes from how we relate to ourselves, even though we think that it has to do with how others perceive us.
That's great. Yeah, and I do want to honor a teammate, somebody, again, who had been a friend of show and a guest, Jason Stark. So a truly psychic, intriguing being who left, I'm going to say, too soon. Hello, Jason. Mm-hmm. But he would say, you know, we so often argue so ardently for our limitations. And I would play with him and turn it in, going, let us honor our expansive possibilities as much as we used to argue for our limitations. There's some dance in there. And then your book is full of, you know, again, you know, constrict focus, full of self is a great autonomy, our authority that we all want to inhale in from where we've outsourced it, personally and collectively, this dangerous appetite for authoritarianism out there in the world. We go, no, so self-possession is a good antidote, and wishing that for all beings, autonomy. And I guess I just want to repeat something that you'd said, because I find it so resonant for us all, you know, that humans have the neurotransmitter serotonin, and you write that plants use either serotonin or auxin, a rooting hormone, to stimulate rhizome growth. And then you add psilocybe cubensis mushrooms use psilocybin and psilocin to stimulate mycelial growth, new synaptic connections in our human brains. And then you do say, you know, that plant medicines are rooted in direct embodied experience as opposed to pharma, which is abstract. But so we can cooperate in micro new synaptic connections, you know, neuroplasticity, right, in our own lives, laying down different neurological pathways. And then by doing that, we can do that culturally as part of bardic magic. Is that also part of your resonant ministry?
Absolutely. And in connection with that, I feel like a partner to autonomy is sovereignty in the true old sense. And right. Once upon a time, the sacred king was wedded to the land and was not the one who made the law, but the one who spoke the will of the land and who gathered the people together. And then that degenerated and people became authoritarian, and we got rid of the king and thought we were taking sovereignty into ourselves, but forgot the part about wetting the land, forgot the cooperative part of that. So I feel like, no, we don't want to go back to king, but we do need to remember what made the king sacred was being wedded to the land. That's what we want. Sovereignty to reside in who we are, that sovereignty has to begin with that marriage to the land.
Right. You know, and then you've mentioned you're the teacher of your teacher. Victor Anderson, right? And Wilhelm Reich, there's so much. Well, this will have to be part one, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, because there is so much richness here. But so maybe a little homage to our mentors, to your mentor, you know, Victor Anderson, and the Ashland, Oregon witches, and the folkways, and the syncretizing of folk traditions. So I hand back to you your mentor, Victor Anderson. Yeah,
absolutely. Who I was never lucky enough to meet in the flesh while he was alive, but who, as long as I've been aware of him, has been a presence who's walked very closely with me. And I was truly blessed to be able to learn from and continue to connect daily with Cornelia Benavides, an amazing visionary and magic worker in her own right, who spent 20 years working closely with Victor and Cora, who brought forward the tradition, which I feel like the perfect description was one that Victor gave to Cornelia, that's in her book, Victor Anderson, an American Shaman, that's mostly transcriptions of conversations with Victor and Cora. And he said, our tradition is a fossil. It's a living fossil. It's the French cave painting that's come to life. Reaching back for that through working with and allying with life itself. And he also said that we, after many reincarnations, all of us will become as gods, and that we would do best to prepare for that because it's a rocky road, which weaves deeply and interestingly with some very old Irish ideas about among the Tuatha Dé, the people who vanished beneath the hollow hills who became Adonishi, the fairy people. They spoke of the Dé agus an Dé, the gods and the not gods. And what differentiated the two was that those who became gods were those who learned their kinship with all things and became able to shapeshift as a result. And some say that the salmon of wisdom who lives at the bottom of the well, the source of all the rivers of the world, is actually the Dagda, the generous god, having shapeshifted into the form of the salmon to be able to dream in the deep. And so Victor was very much carrying that forward and weaving together different bits of his own heritage with Irish and Scottish and Welsh and Yoruba Buddha traditions, all stirring together in a syncretic cauldron that brought forward a very beautiful and powerful stream, which actually is one of the streams that fed into Starhawk's magic. She was a student of Victor's.
Wait, say that again. It fed into whose message?
Starhawk. She was a student of Victor.
Oh, really? Oh, that's so great. And it's, again, Starhawk's birthday tonight. Starhawk's birthday tonight. You can join in at earthactivisttraining.com. Find out about that. But no, you said many, many magic words. So the dreaming, the to and fro between worlds and the dreaming. And you say that, you know, reishi mushrooms and dreaming, you know, allow for dreams to go to core issues to resolve. Yeah?
Yeah. So I came across listening to a lecture by an herbalist named Matthew Becker, who I haven't met, but is a good friend of my good friend Matthew, and yours, Matthew Wood, several years ago. And Becker had said that reishi pulls trauma out of tissue. I thought, well, that's a fascinating concept, but I don't know what that means. Right. And I just sort of tucked it in the back of my head. And then a couple of years went by, and it was bubbling in my cauldron, and I started thinking about about how reishi grows, and about how it's growing on these old, old trees, and it reaches its mycelium into the wood, which is the physical repository of all of the memory of these trees over centuries. And breaking that down and metabolizing it into this new fruiting body that then sends forth these golden spores in the wind. A little while after that, I was working with somebody who was having panic attacks. And Reishi called to me because Reishi is such a grounding medicine as a medicine to help this person. And when she came back for follow-up, she said that the formula was working great and that she had been having this interesting experience where she would meet with people in dreams who she had unresolved things with, and they would resolve what needed to be resolved, and she would wake up feeling like a part of her past was healed. And I thought, oh, that's wonderful, and I wonder if it's the Reishi that's doing that. So next follow-up, the person was still feeling great, but was feeling like she was maybe doing a little bit too much work in her sleep and wanted to rest more. And so I said, well, let's see what happens if you rotate Reishi out and switch it in for Ashwagandha. And sure enough, the dream visits stopped. And then a little while later, she came back and said, I think I'm ready for them again. And we put Reishi back in, and they started happening again.
And what was the part of the Ashwagandha in that?
Oh, that was to be another grounding, centering, heart-soothing medicine that wasn't going to be moving things as actively as Reishi.
Oh, interesting. So because, you know, you make these distinctions, I think, which are useful for all of us to inhale and brew and customize. You know, so there's orthodox medicine, which has its place, you know, when we're in a dire circumstance, you know, and that will alleviate symptoms. But you seem to be implying what many people resonate with, which is that's maybe a useful part one, maybe. But then to heal, that's when we move, you know, maybe when the acute crisis is passing, then we move to the herbs to truly heal the causation. I just remember once on a spectacular Ibogaine journey, long, very intense, you know, but so interesting, and it, you know, heals addiction and whatnot, but it does by going to the core thing. It's like you can, there's many stages to the adventure, but at the end, it's like a dolphin scanning your body, going nim 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 nim, you know, and then giving a vision of the core issue about the addiction or about the cuckoo relationship or the whatever in a very calm, resolving way. And it's like, oh. And is that part of the partnership, in a sense, to go to the deeper realms, like your friend, your colleague, your patient, going to the dreaming world to resolve the core underlying issues behind panic and all of that?
Absolutely. Although, interestingly, we don't always have to consciously engage the content in order to get there. Sometimes, sometimes that information the talking self attaches to is important, and sometimes it's not. And ultimately, it is learning different patterns of feeling and embodiment from these other embodied beings whose chemical and electromagnetic signatures come into our field that allows us to shift into a different kind of presence.
And then you'd said also for those who've had a daunting diagnosis, you say terminal disease, but I say you never know. For those who have a daunting diagnosis, you say gardening, wilderness, and the inner wilderness of the unconscious with psychedelic allies are three useful things, you know, when facing a daunting underworld adventure. And that brings us to, you know, just you mentioned many cauldrons, and you've spoken about how you had COVID, right? And yeah. Pluto in Capricorn, you know, is death rebirth in a cauldron way. The whole culture, the cauldron of death and rebirth. It's the pandemic that, you know, to be resolved when we quit destroying the earth. And what shall we ladle out? But if you want to narrate a little bit of your COVID adventure and what was useful, emerging, and you said it's still a companion of some kind, and the vaccines had been helpful after you'd had COVID, right?
Yes, absolutely. So, COVID is a fascinating journey, and this virus that moved into our systems and throws out of balance one of the core pieces that helps us maintain flow, which is the balance between angiotensin and renin in our bodies that helps that maintains our blood pressure. We depend on an enzyme called ACE2, angiotensin converting enzyme 2, to break down the angiotensin that tightens our blood vessels. And because COVID occupies the receptor site on the cell membrane that compound would otherwise occupy, it ends up causing a constriction of blood flow throughout our body. And we're especially sensitive to it in our lungs. And it's interesting to me, I didn't even realize until we're speaking now, another level that the metaphor of what I experienced acutely goes to, which is that I felt as though my lungs had become made of dried, stretched out leather. And it didn't occur to me until now that actually the condition in which that would really happen to somebody would be being buried in a peat bog. And so in a lot of ways, I was undergoing that kind of ritual burial in the peat.
Oh,
and
great. Going
into this cavern of my chest that held so many ghosts of feelings, especially so many ghosts of grief. And found that for a long time I was really moving through those reawakened feelings within my chest. And it's interesting too that one of our primary inflammatory molecules, histamine, is also a neurotransmitter that exists for the purpose of creating memories in tissues of painful events. And so we're in these hyperinflamed states. We can have a lot of that activated. And there's a degree to which, just as when you're trying to separate yourself from the story of your own death, there's a degree to which one benefits from being able to step back and be the observer and remember that this isn't all of experience. This is emotion at a time being reawakened by a particular set of biochemical events, where it has an opportunity to be resolved. And I found that, interestingly, three of my deepest allies in this healing, hawthorn, which is such a liminal plant and such a cool, dark medicine that helped to relax the blood vessels and cool the fire, but also to open to the shimmering realms. And the plant whose flowers smell simultaneously of sex and death, that marks that blooms at Beltane in this world and at Samhain in the other world, and stands at the gate between worlds. And also, you know, when Thomas the Rhymer fell asleep beneath the hawthorn tree, he was shown that you can take the road of righteousness that sticks beset with thorns and briars, but you'll get cut by those thorns and briars. You can take the road of wickedness that looks broad and easy, or you can take the third road, the road to Elfame, the road of accepting the Wild Queen's kiss and receiving the tongue that cannot lie.
Except that again, the third road is the road of which?
Accepting the kiss of the Fairy Queen, which binds you to that other realm. And then her gift when you return is the tongue that cannot lie.
Oh, that's great. And that's so very now. That is so very the astrological beauty of it all right now. That's wonderfully said. We're drawing to a close all too soon, which is why I think of this as part one, and just for our dedicated listeners, because there's much we want to get to, and we will, because I will be. Also, Sean Patrick O'Donoghue, who has agreed to join me and Amichaela Gaston on Monday night at 6 p.m. West Coast time, 9 p.m. East Coast time. Oh, that's right. I think I gave you the wrong time. we'll work that out backstage for our audio only, Kahoot, and you can register at coyotenetworknews.com. Because, we want to get to, you have so much written in your splendid book about cauldrons. Again, I want to say that this book, which is full of rich brewing and each paragraph really full of resonance, The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are by Sean Patrick O'Donoghue, and we didn't get to Wilhelm Reich, and you're living right next to him, and our animal self that thrives on pleasure and loving connection, but we will. we will get to all those things, and neurodiversity, and Shen, and Amargan, and many other things. If there's anything you want to say in about 30 seconds, I will give that to you.
Well, I would say that our dear departed mentor from the other side, who I never knew in person, Terence McKenna, said, I think the most important thing, which is nature speaking to you, and it is not a metaphor.
That's great. That's great. Another Celtic bardic ally. I did know Terence a squidge, and we welcome him to his Scorpio self. That's great. Well, thank you so much, and we get to Kahoot again. I like keeping this rolling. Sean Patrick O'Donoghue, our guest, The Forest Reminds Us Who We Are. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, also Patreon Visionary Activist Show, and thanks so much to Board Up Jose Gonzalez, and we will reconvene next week with Barbara McLean and Democracy in Chains and the Very Real Fears We're All, the Threats We're All Facing. Woof, 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 woof. Thank you, team. Oh, yeah, yeah.